is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
The 9 o'clock hour. So it is kind of like the same old song, right? The Emgro Blog Roundtable.
I'm deeply insulted by the song choice.
The computer chose it.
Yeah. Not good enough.
You're mad at the computer for
it's
choosing
Motown, isn't it? What do you hate, Detroit?
No,
you
it's
hate
just,
Motown.
It's a very accusatory song to come back to. It's not like Welcome to the Jungle. Like, that's the jungle.
Oh, there you go. So you want us to play Welcome to the Jungle at the top of the nine on Thursdays?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Well, if it didn't remind me of Rome, then I think that would be a good song.
Maybe some Sujo Stevens would be appropriate. Yeah.
If you want to send me like six song choices, and I can narrow it down to three, and we can play those three every Thursday in the 9 o'clock hour.
Well, you guys just played like Shade McMahon's entrance music, so.
Well, yeah, because it was time for the money.
Right.
No, but like, you know, I want Bobby Roode's entrance music. That's
what you want Glorious.
Led Zeppelin.
There you go. So Ms. compile a list, and we're going to have some entry music for the 9 o'clock hour on Thursdays.
You got it.
Nice.
No Mr. Brightside or anything?
So we've had this conversation. I mean, it's not a song I dislike. I was just surprised that the kids were so into it.
Don't worry. There will be no
culture.
We will not play any Pop Evil.
Thank you.
That will not happen as an intro song.
It's thank you.
Yeah, when they play that at certain games. They played it a lot of baseball games.
Really?
Yeah.
Like this year?
Last season, they were playing it during like the warm-ups and stuff. They were playing like, it's not like, that's when I walked out and then I came back in. I don't like that song either. So, but we're not here to talk about music. We're here to talk football because we are 16 Denard Robinson days away to the start of the Michigan football season. Of course, we have Brian Cook, MGO Blog, Ed Feng, thepowerrank.com. Everything going well on your websites, guys?
I don't know.
I had a little Twitter chat about Infinite Jest with Seth from MGO Blog this morning, which was kind of cool and weird all at the same time.
That's a little odd. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's stereotypical.
But my site's great. I had an article about how to use regression to predict football. People seem to like it, so go check it out.
Did it predict Michigan to have a really good year?
No, we can talk about that.
All right, then I don't like it. So before we get into football itself, guys, last week on Friday, there was a news dump day and does need to be discussed because now there are two coaches in the Big Ten East that are on paid administrative leave. Yeah. One, I assume we'll be back at some point, whenever that is, if it's a suspension or not, with Urban Meyer. The other side, DJ Durkin is a little bit of trouble.
I would hope so. I mean, there was an article on ESPN with so many different anonymous sources that it just feels like most of that has to be true. And if most of it's true, I mean, they already fired the strength coach, and it's your job to know.
Correct.
It is your job to know.
Yep.
So if your strength coach is demeaning people and belittling them and then is so heartless as to actually get a kid killed, you got to go.
And it doesn't help when Jabril Peppers comes out and doesn't exactly support his former DC at Michigan, saying that, what is it? It's aggressive. He's got an aggressive type take on football, and that certainly doesn't help.
And good for Jabril. Like, there's this kind of code of silence that reigns over this stuff. Like, Will Muschamp.
And I was going to ask you about that one. Was of all. How many times have we heard, they're your friends, they're your brethren. So I know his family. I know him. He's a good guy. And people say, what about Hugh Freeze exactly? Oh, he's a good family man. Okay. Yeah. Like, we don't, that line is bunk to me. Like, it doesn't hold any water. And then the anonymous source part, I do understand, and we talked to Eric Adelson about this earlier. I understand there's a time and a place for anonymous sources, and this is one of those because it's essentially a whistleblower moment.
Yeah.
And whether it's a kid that wants to keep playing at that school, or it's a kid that wants to maybe transfer to another school, or maybe he's in a professional locker room now and he doesn't want to have people look at him saying, how dare you say these things from the, you know, the supposed to stay within the team or whatever it might be. I understand that using anonymous sources, and if enough of them are independent and the editors do their job to corroborate the and those who those people are and not say some random, you know, freshman that's been on campus for an hour and then Snyder and Rosenberg decide to use them as an anonymous source, I get why anonymous source actually works in this case. And Will Muschamp, I mean, that was like the meatheadiest meathead response to that question. You're better off doing saying what Jim said, which is I don't want to comment. He's not. We talk about what's going on in our doors, behind our doors, and it's a non-answer. And I understand your point with the code of silence, but just because the guy was your coordinator doesn't mean you saw all those elements that they were gonna that he was gonna turn into a coach that was that demeaning, I mean, and that
as,
yelling and
as
whatever.
As the head coach, you set a tone, and the tone that Harbaugh sets, I'm hoping, is not anywhere near
correct.
The tone that Dirk could have.
I'm pretty confident we'd already know by now, based on how people like to dig anything up that they can on Michigan. I'm assuming we'd already know anything that would be going on.
And we saw a lot about how Harbaugh goes about his team in the all for one, the Amazon series.
All
right?
Or nothing.
You know, Don Brown's the fire on that staff. It's not Harbaugh. So,
well, and you know, the kind of way they go about things is not. As
it's not demeaning necessarily. Yeah, right. It's aggressive, but it's not demeaning. And
right, the way that Harbaugh talks to Spate, you know, it's not buddy buddy, but it's also not, you know, it's not the kind of stuff that was described in the ESPN article about Maryland.
Yeah, no, that was. And so then the follow up, because I got something we were talking about a little bit on the show yesterday and earlier in the week. And following particularly following Maryland's press conference, and I commend Maryland for being very transparent and talking about it and giving the information they have now. The problem is it took 2 months, and it took an article by ESPN to have any of this stuff come to get more attention than it was getting, and it deserved a lot of attention. And it was barely outside of the DC market, and even in the DC market, it was barely discussed at the end of May when he collapsed, and in June when he passed away.
And that is that is interesting because. I haven't corroborated this, but someone told me that after the Michigan State stuff happened, that Ward had an all-hands meeting with the department. He's like, it is our job to report this stuff, and if you report it and nothing happens, go to the media. That's the right approach.
Yeah,
right?
It does get it out there if it's not being handled properly. And that's my issue now I also have is with this new athletic director, who got promoted like 2 weeks after the McNair passing, and he was part of the reason he got the job is he was endorsed by Durkin. And where did the cone of silence within the program start? Was that the football program defending itself, or was it the athletic department as a whole, or the athletic director kind of having that trickle down from there saying, we're not this thorough investigation that wasn't very thorough, that obviously didn't uncover anything because they're now uncovering things that led to dismissals and will lead to more dismissals.
But I kind of want to be Sam Webb here and be like, well, where's the national media? Like, this kid died. I mean, it wasn't like...
Agreed. I agreed.
Well, I mean, ESPN is the national.
But it took two months.
Well, but they got to put together the story. Like, it's not something you can just throw off and be like,
okay.
No, and that's true. But it seemed like the first month.
I mean, a kid.
It seemed like it was an afterthought. Like, oh, kid at Maryland died during conditioning. I mean, and that was the end of
it. These things do happen periodically. I think a kid at Northwestern a few years ago passed, and it's.
Right. So a kid could just pass because. Bad stuff happens. A kid could pass because he's got 106 temperature
they were trying
it's like
to
a heart issue.
Right, and that's what it sounded like in the beginning. They were trying to pass it off as an undiagnosed undiagnosed thing, which obviously it was not. So where did that misinformation come from that led to now? Obviously, more is coming out. So I don't know if it's going to go all the way back up to this new AD or not. I did think that they did a good job at the press conference. It took 2 months long, and they're probably shooting different than to actually speak publicly or to, as an AD and a president, it took them 2 months to go speak to the family. I mean, it's some of those things just, they don't hold water, and their more heads are going to roll. I don't know how high up it goes, but that all of a sudden a team that was trying to, you know, take a step forward and maybe actually have a healthy quarterback for an entire season to maybe be a little bit of a better team. I'm just expecting the wheels to fall off at Maryland and they have to start all over again next year, which is not a good look for the bottom part of the Big Ten East, which you thought would be Indiana, maybe Rutgers, and Maryland rising up a little bit. But we all know it's in the end of the day, the Big Ten East is still about four teams and nobody else.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't. It's kind of a jarring transition.
No, it is. I do want to get to the football side of it because they have to have their investigation and they have to have things come to the fore and let them do their thing. But at least they're doing it. And we'll wrap it up with this. They're transparent. At least now they are. Probably good examples to set for other places like Baylor, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State to actually be transparent about these things.
The moral of the story is always just go to the media. Just go to the media. Don't even screw around with internal reporting. Just tell the media.
And tell the truth to the extent that you know it, right?
Yeah, but don't tell the internal truth. Just tell the media.
And tell the truth. Which is now you have, of course, you know, when the Ohio State stuff or the Michigan State stuff and the Penn State stuff, you have the fans that are killing the media, being the messenger and telling the story. At Maryland, if you read the comments from down there, they're like, all right, I guess Durkin's got to go, and good job by the by ESPN to uncover this stuff, and let's clean it up. It's a really different take from the fan base. It's probably because their team's not nearly as relevant or as good. But
I mean, there's less of a, like, oh no, what are we going to do without DJ Durkin? Nobody's ever said that. Like, it's just part of it, and part of
well,
it is the fact
but
that
if you're a Maryland fan, I mean, it's been a while since...
Yeah, but also this is something where it's really more difficult to dismiss it. And dismiss it is what a lot of people want to do for a lot of these things. And kid straight up dying is not.
No, you can't dismiss it. You shouldn't dismiss any of the stories that we've seen.
But is it easier to dismiss because he doesn't have two national titles?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, let's be blunt. Some people have messed up priorities. One of them is the commissioner of the Big Ten.
Yeah. We were just going. I don't think I have the full list in front of me. No, I had it with me the other day. I think it was on a different sheet of notes. But if you go through and you looked, I just went through seven, and you went through so Maryland now, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, Minnesota with the players they kicked out the team for the sexual assault scandal, Indiana firing Kevin Wilson for abuse of players, Illinois firing Beckman for abuse of players / being a terrible coach. That's all within the last few years or lingering from the last few years. That's half of your league if you're Jim Delaney. And that's just the start of it. Hopefully there's no more that I'm missing, but that's half of your league from a league that we used to have a high horse. We used to look down at the SEC that every single program was on probation and had issues.
Also, Minnesota's basketball program.
Right.
Keeping... The big on their team for months,
right?
After they knew that he was gonna get the Ziggy, and is this legendary or leadery? I don't remember which of the conference titles this is more inspired by, but little bit of hubris.
Yeah, all of a sudden the Big Ten, we used to have. Talk about all the academics and the high horse, the this and the that, and
I mean,
the Big
Ten talk about that.
Yeah, but the Big Ten is not the stellar reputation. Of the Big Ten is not quite what it was just five or so years ago, and Delaney should be held accountable for some. I understand each individual school has to be held responsible for their each individual actions.
We're
going to
create a new conference that's just us, Wisconsin, and Northwestern, and we'll play each other four times a year, and that'll be it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
No, yeah, so it can't be Purdue because they don't have a hospital to get your players to, and we can go down the list. Actually, I think they do
what
now.
About Nebraska?
They
can we play Nebraska?
Yeah, Nebraska has issues, but they have Scott Frost, so we're just waiting.
Well, but that'd be good for excitement. I mean, three games against Nebraska.
Not to get in trouble just because Scott Frost is going to whine about something.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think Nebraska's good.
Yeah, we can play Nebraska. We can put Nebraska.
What about Iowa? Can we play Iowa?
They had the Rabdo, but that's probably just a. One off thing. So
all right, so we got five teams in the league.
All right, there you go.
Strong conference.
There you go. Yeah, because we didn't bring up Rutgers. They've had all kinds of issues in the last five plus years, and that's eight in the Big Ten. So yeah, we're running out of options here.
The basketball coach just hurling basketballs at people.
Yeah, no, we're running out of options here. It's kind of sad, to be honest. It's really sad. But I know you guys actually came to talk about fun things, talk about football. So we'll take a break. We are going to. Move past that conversation, but I wanted to get you guys' take on what's going on around the conference because it's kind of embarrassing as a conference, which goes back to maybe one of my things where I always say, I'm worried about Michigan, and I'm not worried about everybody else. And when the people say, oh, it's good for the conference if this team wins this game, or it's good for the conference if that happens, I'm like, yeah, for the most part, I'm just going to worry about what's good for Michigan, and what's good for Michigan is staying out of trouble. And they seem to be – our biggest issue apparently is talking about chicken and – you know, having former coaches and former players selling shoes. So we'll keep it at that for now, and hopefully that's where it ends and we should be okay. We'll talk football, Michigan football itself, on the other side of the break, as we are 16 days away until the start of the Michigan football season. And obviously people want to hear us talk more football. It's exciting. Things are barely trickling out of fall camp, but there's a few things to talk about. So we'll talk some Michigan football on the other side of the break here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
That's an entrance. Thank you.
Thank you, Miz.
Hey, you know I hook you up.
Thank you.
Miz is going to make a list for me, so I'll have all the music when Miz is no longer on.
You just made the list!
When I go back to that side of the studio, to the glass for next week and beyond, I'll have a list of songs that are Brian Cook approved.
I was just tossing off a joke, and now that's going to be a big thing.
We want to make sure that you approve of the music. All With Rich Reddy in the Townie Top 3, he went through a few different songs and finally ended on picked a song. And we've done that a few times. We don't force music on we force Paperback Writer on John Bacon, but I mean, he's a writer, sure, so yeah, it makes sense.
This will be interesting.
He's getting roasted, so I mean, does it really matter, though?
That's true. Man, that's going to be so much fun, roasting John Bacon in November for Humane Society Fear on Valley. It's going to be so much fun. Are you taking a
nobody
number?
Told me about this.
See? And this is what I told Wendy. This is what I told Wendy a little over an hour ago when she was in. I was like, have people been calling you to volunteer to roast John? And the fact is, the more we talk about it, the more people are going to do exactly what Brian did. He literally raised his hand. Like you were getting ready to get a deli ticket number at the deli counter. You're ready to roll. You're ready to hop in line behind Sam and myself.
My whole life is roasting John U. Bacon.
This is why you wake up early on Thursday mornings.
I just think up zingers, and I have no platform for my John U. Bacon zingers.
Yeah, we're going to have November, night before road game, so you'll be all set night before the Rutgers game.
What does the U stand for? Useless? There's another one. Fill it up.
Yeah, that one's going to come up a lot. So, all right, guys, let's talk a little bit of football. And needless to say, a lot of conversation as we lead into the first game is about the quarterback matchup in that game. And while Jim won't announce anything soon, said maybe he'll have something soon, but it may or may not be public. I'm actually more curious about your thoughts on the other side. Have you seen any of the videos coming out of like some of the Notre Dame practices about Wimbush and Book? And
they're bad.
Like,
it's weird. Like they don't look very good.
No, so like simple like bubble screen passes are inaccurate.
Turf.
Yeah, are bad.
And like I'm sure that they've completed some of those. Why don't you put that video out? It's weird.
Well, I mean, Josh Allen couldn't complete a dump off last year, and he went in the top 10 in the NFL draft. So, you know, there's a future for guys like that.
Wimbush is a sub 50% pass. At least Allen's above 50%. I don't think he's
marginally above 50%.
I'm convinced after watching the little bit of tape that I saw from their practice and having seen them play last year, I do expect Wimbush to start the game. But I also expect Don Brown's defense to just totally mess with him, and then they go to Book at some point. I don't think Book is great. He's not the athlete, but he is more accurate as a thrower.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a game that Michigan's going to win like 13-4.
Okay.
Maybe 5. We'll see.
Yeah. That'll be good. I mean, they lost McClinchy and Nelson off that offensive line. What drop-off do you get?
They also had their running back into the draft, even though he didn't get picked.
Isn't that insane? Like, the NFL made a definitive judgment about why this kid averaged 7 yards a carry last year, and it wasn't him.
Right.
Because two linemen are first-round picks. The coach is now with the Bears, I think. Yeah. And so that's a...
I mean, he must have had terrible measurables too, and there's other.
He
must.
I know you're somewhat joking about that score, but when some Notre Dame blogger went on this crazy thing about Notre Dame's going to win 31-17, blah blah blah, all this stuff, and I was like, he might be right on the Michigan score. They might score 17, but if they score 17, they win the game. Michigan does.
Yeah, I strongly believe that.
Unless the defense or unless the offense or special teams does something that we
like hands them 2 touchdowns.
Yeah,
which we've seen before,
but I don't expect, and it's. Notre Dame's offense, I just don't see
how they're going to move the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, Heisand is a really good coach, and even though he's at the Bears, you're going to have that kind of carryover year where there's always, like, when Wilson left Indiana, they were still kind of Indiana for a year. You always kind of had that Wile E. Coyote year where they're over the cliff, but they don't know it yet. So I think this could be that for their offensive line, which would mean that they're still real good. It's just that, I mean, I don't know how you move the quarterback and you move the ball with a quarterback who's kind of like Demaryius Croft. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, if you can't complete passes against Don Brown, it's over. Because he's just going to load up against the run and blitz you to death.
Which I think he's going to do.
Yeah,
I mean, with Michigan secondary, you can...
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, you have three experienced corners now, and that just gives you that much more freedom to stack eight. I can do math. Eight guys in the box and just come after guys, right? And so in some sense, you know, maybe the guys that they're replacing those offensive linemen are good, but like
the main concern for Michigan is that the two guys on the interior are not going to live up to the hype. So if Aubrey Solomon and Mike Dompour are getting pushed around, then you could see, like, if you get a hat to Devin Bush, but are you really going to be able to run up the middle against the Don Brown defense consistently, even if the interior linemen aren't killing it? I'm pretty skeptical about that.
Yeah, and obviously in a couple of weeks it'll be game week, and we'll talk a lot more about the individual matchups going into that game. But I saw that video that was circulating from ND Insider, whoever it was, and obviously it's not ndinsider.com's job to make the fans happier or whatever, but I think I would have cut out some of the balls that hit the turf. Just a couple of them, that fan base must be ripping their hair out right now, just watching that, how many balls hit the turf. Now, we don't have a lot of, you know, video to watch to have any comparison from our side, but based on things that we're hearing and the little bit that we saw when Big Ten Network was there the other day, it seems like our quarterbacks can complete passes and better than they did last year, especially late in the season.
Well, it's hard to be worse.
Well, I mean, the thing that, of course, is the major thing for Michigan is who's going to be the tackles and if they can pass protect even one iota. So
I know it still comes back to that. At the end of the day, that ends up being the conversations all kind of circulate back when we talk football. And
right, like, can you protect the quarterback at all?
Yeah, and even if the answer is not really against Notre Dame, I mean, I think Harbaugh's been thinking about this all offseason, and he's going to have a plan for that. Whether it's getting the ball out quick or the RPO or whatnot.
And I think that'll be
an interesting aspect of seeing what they call in that game.
Yeah, and I think the RPO stuff, and using it the way Chris Collinsworth references RPOs, because he thinks every play action or handoff is an RPO. But it does allow,
really?
Did you not watch the Super Bowl? How many times? And some of them were straight handoffs, some of them were straight play action passes, and some of them were actually RPOs, but it was not everyone was an RPO.
Right.
But if you can make your plays, at least make the defense think that you're going to run an RPO as much as Chris Collinsworth thinks you're going to run an RPO, then it does lock those ends a moment, which helps your tackles. It can help your tackles in pass protection if they're thinking about a run assignment because they think you're running an RPO even if you're running a straight play action pass.
Well, I mean, I've reviewed a couple of game tapes for Patterson, and one was against Alabama, and I think Ole Miss's offensive line was about as bad as Michigan's last year. And he had no chance in the Alabama game because on about every other snap, he had a virtually unblocked guy right in his face up the gut. And that was something that Michigan suffered as well. But if you go look at the stats, Michigan was like 118th in sack rate, and Ole Miss was 60th. So they were able to kind of work around those issues by just having a lot of screens, having the RPOs, and just kind of structuring their offense to account for the fact that they had one offensive lineman. And if Patterson's already comfortable with that kind of style of offense, you know, it's not really that much different for anybody who's not a running back. You know, you're still going to block the same. You're still going to run the routes the same. So if he's comfortable from the gun and Cesar Ruiz is comfortable snapping it, which, of course, he probably is, since he was a high school center and all high schools run the gun these days, I think you are going to see a very different Michigan offense. Now, it's going to be a gun that has two tight ends a lot.
And I think maybe even more pistol than shotgun. I know it's the same concepts, but just because a pistol allows your running back to line up behind you and he can still run downhill for some of the power running game that they want to do.
Yeah. I mean, and Patterson is mobile enough that he can take some running burden on his own. And,
correct.
You know, you're not going to run him 20 times a game, but it's going to be five. And that those five carries will probably be pretty effective, and they'll open up some stuff for some other guys. So I think that the skill set of of Michigan does lend itself to the spread this year because they have a good slot receiver. They have Chris Evans, who's really good in space. So, yeah, I think you're going to see Michigan shift. I don't think it's going to be a rich rod offense. You're going to see some under center, but you are going to see a move towards spreading guys out and letting Patterson do what he's comfortable with.
I talked about this a little bit actually earlier this morning, and because the guys are talking about it, the offensive players have been talking about the tweaking or changing or whatever the offense, yeah, and less 21 personnel and this, that, and the other. But I kind of took it more as, if the offense is more successful than they were last year, which it needs to be, they're going to end up running 15 or so more plays a game on offense. So you could actually keep the amount of power runs or whatever it was in the offense that you ran last year and add 15 plays to it, and those 15 could all be spread plays, and all of a sudden your offense looks a lot different, even though there are a lot of similarities in what you were doing last year. There should be more offensive plays.
Well, and I don't think that this is obviously not going to have an impact for this year, but they're really recruiting some guys who are spread-oriented, which is a little bit weird. So they have, you know, a high school quarterback that they're planning on playing a slot receiver. They have one of the running back recruits in this class is very spread-ish, Eric Gray. So I don't know if this is going to be more of a, we want to do both kind of going forward, because Jim Harbaugh is never not going to have a bunch of tight ends on the roster, not going to have a fullback who looks like a Victorian era mass murderer. No offense. That's a good thing. You're a fullback. So, it, you know, but being able to whipsaw people back and forth, maybe they don't have much secondary depth. Well, let's go with Grant Perry a lot this week, that kind of thing.
Right, because you can go week to week, and if you're going against a team that maybe runs a smaller defense, you put more bigger bodies out there, right, and you try to power them. And that's what's the point of an offense, whether it's a spread offense or a hybrid offense or whatever, it's to create mismatches, right?
Yeah.
And Michigan has so many mismatched guys now on that offense. I mean, there may not be a better mismatched guy if he lives up to what we're hearing about him and he's learned some from some of the things as he's grown through it. A 6'8", 262-pound tight end, who guards him?
Good question. And hopefully that Michigan can actually get the ball to him. Because even the morass that was last year's passing offense, Zach Gentry averaged like 12 yards a target. He has some ridiculous number,
right,
that was like close to tops nationally as a tight end and in that offense. Right. So, yes.
And I'm already thinking about the one that sailed over his head in the Indiana game and things that were where he was open and
I don't know how
never
you
had a chance.
How you sail a pass over a 6'8" guy, but that's something different. But
throwing a half foot taller than the regular sailed.
But pass. You also have a couple 6'5", 250-pound guys, and Mustafa Muhammad is somewhere in there. And Shiro Moore in the audio yesterday from the Media Veil raves about his football IQ. So yeah, there will always be tight end sets. I'm expecting to create mismatches out of three tight end sets because of the opposite side. The defense is going to go, well, three tight ends, we better put some bigger bodies out there. And then if you have a bunch of linebackers trying to guard your tight ends,
well, I mean,
Eubanks
you do have
get past those guys.
You have McCune, you have Eubanks, who's a good shout, and then you also, I mean, you can legitimately put three veteran tight ends out there, and two of those guys have a lot of experience, and they're all athletes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the opener last year, Eubanks got behind the secondary and caught like a 40-yard ball, and I was like, who's that wide receiver? It was Eubanks. And then we have all seen Gentry, and, you know, McCune has been less explosive, I guess, but he, you know, coming out of college, high school, he was the most athletic tight end in the country. So both, all three of these guys, if they can block, are the true, like, dual threat tight ends that Stanford was able to use so well.
Yeah, if you can have more Zach Ertz types,
yeah,
then you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Well, and Kobe Fleener wasn't the best blocker at Stanford too. So
no, I'm
just got to be like,
you just got to be present.
But the better you are as a blocker, because we know all three of these guys can make plays down the field.
Yeah.
The better they are as blockers, the better you can disguise what you're doing, because then it's not so obvious that one guy's in. Oh, it's a pass play. One guy's in. It's a run play.
And both McCune and Gentry were serviceable last year. And given the fact that one was a redshirt freshman and the other one was a redshirt sophomore who converted from quarterback, I think you can still expect them to get significantly better because they're still adding weight and they're still mm-hmm. developing in that area of the game. So I'm super excited to see what those guys do.
Yeah, I love talking tight ends. It's a fun position that's been it can really be weaponized. And they were talking about that Gentry has really he spent the offseason and into this year he's really taken on the part of he needs to become a better blocker. And the better blocker he is, obviously, the more effective the offense is going to be. And that's across the board for all the tight ends. And he was solid. And he was okay, right? He was solid. He was okay. And if he's better,
yeah,
that's that bodes well. And plus, you throw in that they return Tariq Black, which is obviously a huge loss on the outside. And there's a lot of who do you concentrate on if you have, you know, two or three tight ends and you have Grant Perry and you have Tariq Black or you have DPJ. It's gonna become a pick-your-poison thing for the defense if the quarterback is able to have time to get the ball out there. So then it... Hence the whole point of this conversation is it circles back around to where it starts with the offensive line.
Yeah, and RPOs do help with that because, you know, with the offensive line just going to run block, you're not going to rush on that. So you kind of get like a free pass snap there. And so I think they'll work that stuff in just to kind of ease the burden and hopefully Michigan can solidify themselves at tackle. I do think no matter what, the pass protection is going to be a lot better because so much of it last year was dysfunction. So people not picking up stunts, running backs going to the wrong guy, that kind of stuff should get a lot less because you're seeing a lot of guys come back. You have veterans at running back, and you have a much simpler system.
And Brian, I think you bring up a good point that like sack rate also depends on the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So what do you? I mean, if Patterson were here last year with the mess that was the offensive line, I mean, how much better do you think it would get? Just
That's a good point because Patterson is Tate Forcier. Like he's a five-star version of Tate Forcier, but he has that mobility. And a lot of times he's able to escape the pocket and make something happen outside of it. Or Drew Tate, he's that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wilton Spate was able to do that last year in 2016 a little bit.
Yeah.
Not so much before he got knocked out. And then, you know, the other two guys were mobile-ish, but Okorn was not productively mobile. Brandon Peters is more of a pocket guy. So.
Well, Brandon Peters just like couldn't see rushers on his strong side, right? And so I got to think Patterson's better at least having that pocket presence to be like, all right, well, I need to go or I need to get rid of this ball.
Patterson does have a good timer because he's still alive. If he didn't have,
he would have didn't have that. He would have been in a lot more trouble last year.
Ding going off in his head, he wouldn't be hale and hearty this.
So we got a tweet from Trans Obsessor. He said Luganbill yesterday said that he believes Shea won't be very successful at Michigan simply due to the transition of the offensive style. He also said that Peters looked good last season. Was he trolling? Shea will start. He didn't come to UM to be the backup.
Well, Peters looked bad in the bowl game, but I think given the circumstances around him during the regular season, I thought he looked promising, and I don't think anybody should write him off, especially if Shea Patterson is a one-and-done kind of guy. And I think if he has a good season, I think he's not going to stick around in college, and so you really want to have Peters around in case that happens. Shea Patterson had a weird season last year because Hugh Freeze gets fired, and Hugh Freeze is not just the head coach. He is the offensive mm-hmm. mastermind for Ole Miss. They promote their OL coach, who looks like a Sonic manager, and he does. He looks like he manages a Sonic. I will not apologize for that. It's a noble profession.
But like through seven games, he was like the leading passer in the SEC before
he
got hurt.
And some of that is just because they played a couple of
Cupcake
games where he had like 90% completions, and his receiving core was close to awesome.
Yeah, they got an NFL first round NFL guy on that team.
I mean, they had you know Metcalf and AJ Brown, and they had some guys.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also had you know an offensive line that really couldn't protect him at all, and they just didn't want to run the ball. So it really watching these games, you're like, man, they are just relying on Patterson 100%. And it was really strange because, of course, we're coming from a Michigan program that is trying to avoid using the quarterback at all costs. so I think the burden will be less on him, and I think that'll increase his efficiency. And so many of the offensive plays that he was trying to deal with were these weird kind of newfangled plays where like half of it's a screen, and if he doesn't like the screen, he can come off of it. But the only thing he can do is throw a fade to the single receiver on the backside. So if you do that against South Alabama and you have A.J. Brown,
it's going
to
work.
It's going to work. If you're doing it against Alabama and you're throwing it to a true freshman in D.J. Metcalf, that guy's going to get put in the sideline. And so there were a lot of fades that Patterson threw where he probably shouldn't have thrown it, but he had no other choice. So he was kind of boxed into these play calls. He can make reads. He made a bunch of reads in the Cal game. And, you know, the picks in the game were the kind of thing where you throw a slant like a little bit behind your receiver and it bounces up and then some other guy picks it off. So you can see why he was a five-star when he uncorks a fade route, and he doesn't really need to step into it that much. He can just flick it out there. When he gets a guy open downfield, his calmness. So you know that thing where the guy's 5 feet open by 5 feet and he's waving his hand and you get so like jacked up that you throw the ball over his head?
Mm-hmm.
Patterson does not do that. If he gets the hand-waving guy, he's just like, oh, that guy's open. Touchdown.
Fling it, yeah.
Yeah. So he's I think he'll be a success, especially because he's walking into a situation where he does have, you know, a five-star receiver becoming a sophomore in Donovan Peoples-Jones, a guy in Tariq Black who can be that post-up threat. And he's got a bunch of tight ends. And then Grant Perry, I've called him a route artisan for years, and I think this is really the time where you're going to actually get to see him get 50 catches.
734-998-1050. You can email studio at WTK.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. Let's stay in Ann Arbor. Talk to Don. Good morning, Don.
Morning. Question two for the board or the round table. One of the criticisms of the defense last year was that we had trouble covering slot receivers. Is there any indication we're going to do anything schematically different this year to remedy that, or is it just going to fall in the category of, well, we'll just play better? And the more general question, should we give up hope that Michigan State and Ohio State will eventually be returned to their old longtime places on our schedule with not both of them being on the road or at home in the same year?
I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, if
keep hoping when they do the next wave of schedules that they'll balance that back out, but
yeah,
there's no guarantee.
Maybe. I mean, you'd think that. I think if you look at Michigan and Michigan State, I mean, Ohio State and Michigan State, that it also makes sense for both those teams to
because Michigan State is playing. I mean, I guess one of them is going to affect, because Michigan State has both Michigan and Ohio State at home this year.
Right. So you'd think that Michigan State would also want to flip that.
Yeah, but then Ohio State would have Michigan and Michigan State both at home on the road. But it's less impactful for them than it is because they
look
at Penn State and others.
I think for Ohio State, like their anchors on the schedule are Michigan and Penn State.
Right.
And
so keep them opposite home and home. Yeah, I think it makes sense, but I'm not holding
out
hope.
It does make sense.
Then Jim Delaney definitely won't do it.
No. So, as far as, what was the other question? The
defending slots.
Michigan's not going to change the way they approach that because they're mostly a single high defense, and that's going to be, whenever that's the case and you have a slot receiver, that's going to call a safety into action. You know, the thing I've been wondering about is, so if it's third down, you're definitely going to have a nickel cornerback. Does Michigan start looking at second and long as, all right, we're going to put LeVert Hill on the slot, and we're just going to go into a dime package? And if you can convert off that, God bless you. Because the thing about Michigan's corner depth is you have enough guys that you could really put one of the best corners in the country on that and just erase that. Because we saw what happened when LeVert Hill did defend a slot corner last year, and it was a thing of beauty. So if you want to do that consistently, you could.
Well, LeVert Hill is a thing of beauty in general. So one thing to think about with the big plays is that Bill Connelly's done some research, and there's a lot more of a random element in allowing those big plays than anyone gives credit for. It's similar to turnovers. So Michigan's defense had the best success rate in the Big Ten last year, and that's something that we expect to continue. They had one of the worst in terms of looking at explosiveness on successful plays that the other offense had, and that's something we expect to regress way back to the mean. So, yeah, there were a lot of bad plays that the defense had. As good as they were, you would expect that to get better just from regression.
Well, I do think in particular the slot fade was something where Tyree Kanell was in good position a lot, made a lot of difficult catches, made a lot of catches difficult for the opposition, and then the opposition still made those catches. And if you're not getting your hand on the ball, that's always something that you are going to risk. But, you know, the difference between Kanell's ability to get in someone's chest and make him make a tough catch versus, you know, what we saw from Jalen Kelce-Powell in the Wisconsin game, I think that if you replayed last season, the slot fade would be less successful just because...
Well, and Penn State was just, like, on fire, right?
I almost throw that game out because it was such... For the way this defense played, that was the most anomalous game of the season.
Well, so part of my point there is you've got those two slot fades. One of them is Tyree Kanell with his face in the chest of a receiver who makes an awesome catch. Mm-hmm. And, all right, well, that'll happen sometimes. And then you have Levert Hill on a similar play a little bit later, getting his head around, getting a pass breakup, and not even allowing that to happen. So there's like two levels of how good are you at this. And I thought Kanell was actually, like, I gave him a lot of positives on coverage where he got nominally beat because a guy made a great play. And that's going to happen to you sometimes. I thought it happened more often than you would expect last year.
Well, and you like Metellus' coverage, too, even though he had some plays where he got beat.
Well, Metellus had a kind of a not great end of the season, but usually he was the deep safety. So he wasn't frequently the guy that we're talking about when we're talking about slot receivers.
And they do have the opportunity and the ability. It's four guys because you obviously Levert and Long are your starters. They really like the physicality that Brandon Watson provides. And so he can obviously go out there and be a physical corner if you need it. And they think Ambry's right there. So you have the ability to put, as you said, put this a great cover corner on a slot and say, all right, well, we're going to man you up still, but now you don't have this mismatch nearly as much in the slot.
I mean, the thing I wonder about is if it's second and 10, do you lift Tyree Kanell for a cornerback and just be like, we're going to sacrifice maybe a little bit in run defense, but we're going to shut this off?
Depends on the – my guess is to really make this a non-answer. It probably depends on the opponent, right?
Well, it depends on how Aubrey Solomon and
if you're doing
guys
against,
are holding up the middle,
against
too.
Notre Dame versus against Ohio State, you're probably going to give two different answers. Because Haskins can complete a bunch of passes, and sure. Wimbush can't. And so you're going to probably schematically be different on second and 10 against each of them.
Well, but like if you're going up against Penn State, I think that's a consideration. Mm-hmm. Like a three-cornerback, one-safety look on certain downs is something you got to consider.
And let's not appoint Haskins the next coming just yet.
734-998-1050. Let's get in a break. We are way late for a break. We're making Ms. Pilata's hair over there, so we don't want to see that. We want to get to a break, and we'll wrap up with the MGoBlog Roundtable on the other side of here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
The Ticket. Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
Welcome back inside the MDEN studio, Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, online at WTK.com. We were talking about the quarterbacks and staying in the pocket. We got a tweet from B. Anderso, and he tweeted in, another unspoken strength of Shea Patterson is staying in the pocket when he has to, knowing he's going to take a big hit, and still delivering the ball. I mean, we've had issues of shell-shock quarterbacks and guys that can't sit there and wait for that exact the right moment knowing they're going to get hit. Hopefully he doesn't take a lot of those hits, but if he does have that ability, that's going to be another step in the right direction for the offense.
That's accurate, and also he's able to make some accurate throws without having, like, a clean pocket, so he's able to flick the ball out there like an NFL-style quarterback without actually having to step in, which helps him sometimes. So
this is a big benefit just going to that first game. If you started Brandon Peters, if you started the other two guys obviously as well, as opposed to starting Shea Patterson in that game, Shea's played in big venues. And so
Shea's been chased in big venues.
Yeah, but he's been there. He's not going to walk through the tunnel at Notre Dame Stadium and go, oh my, and then just start having those moments of this is so big or whatever it might be, because he's been there, done that in the SEC.
Well, I mean, you know, Peter started against Wisconsin last year. That's a pretty big venue. Like, that's a big game. You know?
That's true.
And Michigan was doing well in that game until he got hurt.
That's true. But he got hurt in that game. So, yeah. But it's... I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what Shea can do with this team and how the offense looks and all that. It's going to be exciting. We're 16 days away from people finally saying to us, I don't want to hear any more talking. I just want to see them do it. Well, we're the ones talking anyway, so it's not like they're the ones doing the talking. But we're all doing talking because that's all you can do from the end of a season until the next season is watch spring ball and get ready for the game. So should be fun, though. I'm looking forward to it. We have one more roundtable before game week. Pretty exciting.
Is it? I'm just thinking about more John U. Bacon zingers.
Every week, I think you should come in and test out some new material on
what
with Sam.
What does the U stand for? Ungood. There. Racket. Is that what they say? Racket.
Yeah, coming up at noon, you can hear that.
Okay. All right, racket.
Oh, sorry, not at noon, at 1. That's right, because Michael Spath now goes to 1 o'clock.
Really?
Love the, yep,
really?
Love the expansion of Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath from 10 to 1.
Nice. Spath,
through,
getting it done.
Getting it done, absolutely.
Who's got it better?